Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the baby boomers when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments, because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and have now been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national consciousness. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right, an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. And that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers in 1787 at the Constitutional Convention practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, that's not separation of church and state, kids. And there's still one school left here in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, you know, it's automatic. It works. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Always remember that. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. And it's free of charge. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the baby boomers' retirement, and we've discovered so far that they haven't saved enough. Social Security is upside down, and we're headed into hyperinflation. That'll destroy your savings. So many of these articles tell you that you need to save more. Okay, let's test that one for a minute. Let's suppose that you increased your savings. You're making $50,000 a year, so let's save 10% of it right off the top, $5,000 a year. You take the $5,000, where are you going to save it? You going to put it in a shoebox, stick it under your bed? You going to put it in the bank where you get 3% interest? You going to invest it in stocks and bonds and get rich? We're going to save 10%. But if we go into hyperinflation, then you're going to have it all wiped out. So what's the purpose in saving? Furthermore, if you were to save 10%, you need the 10% that you're saving so that next year you'll have the 10% to spend on the higher prices. Now, I just ordered some corn. I called the health food store the other day and said, hey, I need to buy some corn. She says, okay. And so I ordered the corn, and she calls me back, and she said, well, I heard that your wife had a question about the corn. She wanted to know if it was GMO corn or if it was open pollinated. Well, anyway, as we were talking, and she said, you know, I've got to know, because my wife had gone to town since I've got to know, because the order is final at 4:30 this afternoon. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, and besides that, the price goes up 33% on the next order. This is the last order at that price. The next order, it's going up by 33%. Now, my government tells me the inflation rate's 4.3 or 4.7% the other day. Excuse me, kids. Would you please send me an email and tell me what it is that has only gone up 4.7%? Hell, if the price of the corn went up 4.7%, I'd call her back and double the order. No, the order for corn is going up 33%. That's the next order it goes in. Now, this hyperinflation is something that's been in the pipelines for a long time. And it's not the cause of our problems, it's the symptom. It came from something, and it came from unjust weights and balances. That's where it came from. It came from unjust weights and balances. There's a statute in the Bible, two of them, as a matter of fact, in Leviticus 19, 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. Listen to this. Here's what your God told you. I mean, here's what the creator of the universe said about Federal Reserve notes and mortgages and trust deeds and bonds and stocks and, you know, all these paper pieces that you invest in. He said, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have. I am the eternal your God, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And in Deuteronomy 25, he says, you shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. Because all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. Now, I often ask people, you know, when they're in class, say, do you have a checking account? Oh, yeah, yeah. I've got a checking account. Got any credit cards? Oh, of course. Stocks, bonds, mortgages, and other negotiable instruments? Oh, yes, of course. All right. Well, that's an abomination to this guy. Now, I'm sure that in your church and in your religious circles, that's righteousness. I just wanted to point out that the guy that wrote the Bible said that it sucks raw eggs on a black night. Now, there's another little segment that goes with this. It's called usury. Usury. That's where you pay interest. You know, you got this credit card, and so now you got to pay 15, 20, 25, 30% interest on the money that you use or borrow. Well, God told us in Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27, he said, if you lend money to any of my people that is poor by you, you shall not be to him as a usurer, and neither shall you lay upon him usury. And if you at all take your neighbor's raiment to pledge, if you take collateral, you shall deliver that collateral to him by that the sun goes down, because that's his covering only, and it's his raiment for his skin, wherein shall he sleep. And it shall come to pass, when he cries out to me, that I'll hear, because I'm gracious. And in Deuteronomy 24, verse 6, it says, no man shall take the neither or the upper millstone to pledge, because it takes a man's life to pledge. Now, today, people go shopping for mortgages. I was watching Katie last night on the news, and that little segment, you know, on this downturn in the economy and housing and one thing and another. And so they're out there interviewing people, and this one young woman in Chicago, and she was a first-time home buyer. First-time home buyer, and they were interviewing her, and she's been out shopping for a mortgage. And I got to thinking about that, and I said, shopping for a mortgage. Now, a mortgage places you into voluntary servitude, not involuntary servitude, but it places you in voluntary servitude. You are volunteering to serve. It's like joining the army. And I thought, now, who in his right mind, you know, who, except someone who is mentally deranged, would want to go shopping for a mortgage? Who would want a mortgage? Who would want AIDS, herpes, or VD? Do you go shopping for venereal disease? Do you go out looking for the Spanish flu or bubonic plague? But you go shopping for a mortgage. Now, a mortgage is unjust weight and balance. A mortgage is laced with interest, and a mortgage is laced with collateral. God said no collateralizations of loans, no usury or interest on loans, and we're out shopping for what? Yeah, you got it. We're shopping for a mortgage. It kind of reminded me of Edgar G. Robinson. Remember in the Ten Commandments? Edgar G. Robinson, you know, played the part of the Israelite taskmaster. He wasn't an Egyptian, he was an Israelite, but he was working for the Egyptians. Now, Americans today, this is a very common term for all you people out there in the rest of the world, very common term to go shopping for a mortgage here in the United States. And so we have these adjustable rate mortgages, we have straight mortgages, we have Fannie Mae mortgages, and we have Jenny Mae mortgages and conventional mortgages. I mean, we've got mortgages coming out the yin-yang. And for some reason, we kind of like them. I just wanted to point out that they're illegal and unlawful, and they violate the law of God, they violate the Ten Commandments, they violate reason, logic, and common sense. And I can remember as a kid, they used to have mortgage burnings, where we burned the mortgage. People were not shopping for mortgage. A mortgage, if somebody had a mortgage, it was like having measles. You had to quarantine the poor guy because there's something wrong with him. People wanted to be free and clear. People wanted to be debt-free. People wanted to be free of mortgages and encumbrances. A mortgage is bond servitude. Why would anybody want to voluntarily go into bond servitude? You know, here in America, we talk a lot about freedom. The president's constantly talking about Osama bin Laden wanting to take away Americans' freedom. What kind of freedom was he going to take away from them? Their Federal Reserve notes and mortgages? What was he going to do? Take away their stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments that they enslaved themselves with? I didn't think he was going to do that, but, you know, just in case you were concerned, I thought I'd bring it to your attention. All right, now, a guy by the name of Harry Figge was hired by President Reagan. President Reagan, remember him back in the early 1980s? Not too long after President Nixon took us off gold in 1971, in 1982, we started having some monetary problems. In fact, it started before then. After we went off gold, the 1970s were laced with the Vietnam War and economic problems and runaway inflation. And inflation got so bad here in the United States, it was up around, I don't know, 12, 13, 15%. Interest rates went up to 20 or 21%. And it was culminated about 1980 with the price of gold topping out at $850, and a guy by the name, let's see if I remember his name now, big tall guy, took over the Federal Reserve. I'll think of his name here in a minute. He's about 7'4", great big guy, and he took over the Federal Reserve, raised interest rates, and he bailed us out. God bless him, you know, he solved the problem, at least for a while, not permanently, but he solved the problem for a while. And I thought back in the late 70s and early 80s, I said, well, I think this is where the economy turns turtle and we're going upside down, and we're going to have this big, you know, Great Depression, repeat of the 1930s. Paul Volcker was his name. Paul Volcker. He's still alive. I saw him on TV the other day. Pretty old. He must be pushing 90, but he's a great big guy. Anyway, Paul Volcker, he bailed our chestnuts out, or he and the Illuminists and the Illuminati or the Committee of 300, I don't know who figured it out, but they said, well, raise interest rates and we'll save the dollar and we'll go from there. Well, President Reagan took over, and right away, about 1982, he put together an organization called the Grace Commission. And in the Grace Commission, Peter Grace was the chairman of it, he brought in a guy by the name of Harry E. Figge Jr. Now, this speech, I'm going to read you a little story here. This speech is condensed from a series of lectures presented by Harry E. Figge at the Town Hall of Los Angeles, California on June 27th, 1988. That was 19 years ago. The City Club of Cleveland, Ohio on March 31st, 1989. 18 years ago. And the League of Women Voters in Cleveland, Ohio on July 26th, 1990. 17 years ago. A long time ago, Harry Figge went around and he's preaching a sermon here. So like a preacher, he's going around the country and he's telling people, he said, now listen, we got a problem here, we got to solve this, and we need your help, and we want you to get on board. And so he starts off by saying, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today on the subject of the national debt. And I want to stress first and foremost that I'm a businessman, and I've never been and never intend to be involved in politics. However, if you wonder why I'm up here, I really love this country because, as I tell people, where else but in the United States could a person from a very humble means, whose father died when he was 16, follow his life plan and build two companies? I'm here today because I fully believe that this great country of ours is headed into serious trouble because of the government's dangerous inability to reduce its debt or control ongoing budget deficits. I became involved in this issue quite by accident in 1982 when Peter Grace made me co-chairman of the President's Private Sector Survey on Cost Control, the Grace Commission, and as a result of that, I became privy to some information that I wished I'd never heard about. Information that showed me how threatening our government's spending policies are. So this past Tuesday, I met with several congressmen on the subject, including Congressman Dennis Eckert from Cleveland and Congressman Dick Armey from Texas. And I showed six different congressmen the debt and deficit projections for the next few years, and every one of them said, gee, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't realize where we were headed. They had no idea that the ball game was going to be over about 1995. Dick was an economics professor and is probably the most knowledgeable man in Congress on economics. So after I showed him the projections, Dick said, Harry, you just ruined my day. And I said, well, it's about time. Peter ruined mine back in 1982, and I haven't had a good one since. Now, surveys today show that the national debt and the deficit are uppermost in the minds of the American people. Congress recognizes this, and they say that it was the savings and loan crisis that finally brought it home to the American people. But I say it was perfectly understandable all along because the Americans have been struggling personally with debts and deficits and budgets all of their lives, and they know what happens to them if they do not live within their personal income. So naturally, they began to worry when they saw a profitable country that is not living within its income and has not lived within its income since 1952. So I want to put this massive problem into the context of the person on the street and show you why the government is headed into real trouble. Let's say you have a net take-home pay of $1,000 and you take $100 of that $1,000 and you put it into some kind of a pension plan, like a Kroger or an IRA or a 401k. The other $900 just makes ends meet. You just live from paycheck to paycheck. Now suppose somebody gives you a free credit card. They give you American Express, maybe a Visa, MasterCard, or Discover card. Why stop with one? Whatever you want. We'll just give you the credit cards, but you realize that you can't use any of these credit cards. Then all of a sudden, you meet a very tall man with a long white beard, a big stovepipe hat, red and white striped pants, and a blue coat and stars all over it, and he says, my name is Sam. Uncle Sam. And I am a financial advisor, and I want you to follow my advice. I want you to use your credit cards, and when they bill you, just send them a 30-year IOU at 8% interest. And you say, yeah, but I have to pay the interest, even if I accept the IOUs. Sam says, do you remember that $100 that you were putting in a pension plan? Well, take that $100 and use that to pay the interest. And you put an IOU in your pension plan, and every time you take $100 out, you just put an IOU into it. 20 years from now, you'll have 20 years worth of IOUs, but what do you care? And you remind him, well, Uncle Sam, there's a difference between you and me. You've got a printing press in your basement which gives you the unlimited credit, but I'm going to go to jail if I do that. Now, that's why Americans are concerned, because they know that we cannot keep on doing this. So before I go any further, let me explain the difference between a deficit and debt, for those of you that might not be familiar with these two terms. The deficit is the shortfall that we have in any one given year. So if you take a $100 billion budget and you spend $110 billion, you get a deficit of $10 billion. Now, at the end of the year, you've got to do something with that $10 billion that you owe. So you move it over into your long-term shortfall, and that becomes your debt. Now, in 1982, the annual deficit was $128 billion, up from $4 billion in 1974. The debt in 1982 was at $1 trillion, up from $484 billion in 1974. But it had taken us 200 years from the start of the Republic until 1974 to create that debt of $484 billion. We'd gone through World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, and we still had a very manageable situation. But since 1982, when the debt first hit $1 trillion, it has now tripled to $3 trillion. So when Peter Grace called me and a number of others down to Washington in 1982, we were commissioned by President Ronald Reagan to find some savings in government. And I can tell you, it was like shooting fish in a rain barrel. We contributed $77 million of corporate money and about 500 employees, and we found more than $424 billion in savings in 9 months. We could easily have identified over $1 trillion in savings, but President Reagan was not interested in going on any further. Of the $424 billion that we identified, Congress instituted $152 billion in savings by 1986. Spread annually, that averages $38 billion in savings per year. And at the same time, President Reagan pushed through a $50 billion tax increase. Now, if you were to take the $50 billion in new tax increase revenue and the $38 billion saved from spending, that's $88 billion a year. That should have gone to reduce the deficit, which at that time was $128 billion a year. So we should have dropped the annual deficit to $40 billion, but instead of that, the government ran up a $152 billion deficit that year. So after we saved them, the $38 billion in savings coupled with the $50 billion in new tax revenue, instead of having $128 billion, which we had the year before, they ran up the deficit to $152 billion. So the problem is, in the last 10 years, government revenue has risen by 8%. That's 8% a year, compounded. But expenditures have gone up 11%, compounded. Now, that may not sound like too much, but let me put it in perspective for you. Right now, Congress has 116% more money to spend than they had 10 years ago. But they have spent 186% more than they spent 10 years ago. So every time you give Congress $1, they spend somewhere between $1.58 and $1.68. And I'll tell you what I learned in Washington. They not only don't understand this problem, they don't even care about it. Now, the thing that finally brought me up short and has ruined my last 8 years were the projections that Peter got from his economists. And these numbers I'm going to give you, and I've had them verified in the last 6 months by the Citizens Against Government Waste. So they are current, and we're now at $1 trillion in debt in 1982. Now, that debt is going to go to $13 trillion by the year 2000. And we were at an annual deficit of $128 billion, and the deficit is going to go to $2 trillion. Now, let me graph the debt on my thumb and forefinger. I've got my thumb horizontal and my finger vertical, and we've got 1776 way out here at the tip of my thumb. The debt line runs along my thumb absolutely flat until 1976, gets up into the web of my thumb in about 1980, and starts to come up about 1995, and we're at the first knuckle of my finger. Now you turn asymptomatic, and you start going straight up, and by the year 2000, we're going straight up to the top. So what does that mean? It means that when we hit the $500 billion deficit here in 1995, we're going to go to $2 trillion in 2000. We have lost our ability to control our economy by taxation, and we run the risk of something that I'm going to talk about. That something is hyperinflation. Now, back in 1982, I said, well, we've got some time, and nobody's going to be this stupid. We're going to get people to understand this thing, and I'm very sorry to tell you that as I stand here in 1990, we're somewhere between 1990 and 1993 in our deficit projections, a little ahead of target. I was with Senator Robert Dole the other day. He just come from the White House budget negotiations, and he said, we didn't make any progress again today, but we will. Now, you've heard all about Graham Rudman. It used to be Graham, Rudman, and Hollings. But Senator Hollings said he wanted a divorce from the bill because it was such a travesty. Graham Rudman originally said it would have a zero deficit in 1991, but revised that to $60 to $65 billion a couple of years later. You see, the reason is Congress runs around like chickens with their heads off right now, and is technically, unless they get a budget agreement, they've got to cut $100 billion out of the budget this year because they're at $168 billion. The thing that I want to tell you is that the $168 billion you hear is a travesty. It's a lie foisted out on the American people. Do you remember all those IOUs that you were peeling out of your pension fund and your credit card fees? Well, government doesn't count those as a part of cash deficit. So we have for 6 years run an actual deficit in the U.S. government of more than $250 billion a year. And this year we're running over $360 billion, and it could be as high as $435 billion. So let me explain that to you. Start with Graham Rudman. That's $168 billion. Now remember the credit card example when you took $100 away from your Kroger, your IRA, and sent in an IOU? Well, that's what the government is doing to the nine trust funds, including Social Security, military pensions, railway pensions, and postal pensions. The government is raiding all of these pensions, taking out the cash, spending it today, and putting in IOUs. Now, Uncle Sam is taking $120 billion in trust fund surpluses and replacing those cash funds with IOUs. Instead of funding them with cash, they're funding them with the federal deficit. And then they don't even count these IOUs or the interest on them. And when those IOUs start coming due, the government is going to owe trillions of dollars to Social Security, which will be supporting more retirees with fewer and fewer workers. So that's the first thing that's been foisted off on the people. Now, the savings and loan crisis is the second. Mossbacher, our country's head economist, made very sure when Bush stuck his neck out on the savings and loan crisis that those costs were taken off the deficit. Current estimates are that the savings and loan debacle is going to cost us about $500 billion overall, and about $100 billion next year. That's another $100 billion that's not being counted. So the deficit has gone from $168 to $388 billion. And I haven't talked to you about the student loan problem. I haven't talked to you about the $300 to $500 billion toxic waste cleanup that's going to come from our military bases. And I haven't mentioned a word to you about crack babies or AIDS or any of the new programs that Congress is talking about. So we're running right now, in 1988, a true deficit of around $300 to $500 billion. And my estimate is that when we hit the $500 billion level, we lose our capacity, our capability to control that by taxation. So don't ever think for a minute that Congress doesn't want inflation, because they know that the only way they can pay off this debt is with inflated dollars. And if that isn't bad enough, the financial structure of the United States is now very tenuous. Let me give you some examples. We definitely have a recession on the horizon, and we're just beginning to see it. We're seeing it in furniture, in housing, all through construction and in aerospace. Let's talk about our commercial banks. Since 1983, 713 commercial banks have failed. That's only 5% of the commercial banks in the United States. But when you fail 5% of your banks in your good years, what is going to happen in the bad years? Think what the bad times are going to do. FDIC, the chairman, Bill Seidman, came out the other day and he said, if we get a severe recession, the safety net that we have under the commercial banks will never hold. There isn't enough money in the FDIC to bail out all of the banks that are going to fail. Now, most people don't realize this, but 13 insurance companies failed in 1988. Now, I'm talking about property and casualty, not the health insurance companies, the property and casualty companies. 39 failed in 1989, so we've had 52 insurance companies fail in the last 2 years. The other thing you don't hear about is that the federal government is underwriting $5.8 trillion of debt from things that aren't really truly government, such as deposit insurance, loan guarantees, pension programs, government-sponsored enterprises, direct loan programs, and it goes on and on. So if we ever get a severe downturn, then after 50-some years of recovery, it's got to be sitting out there somewhere. We're going to be, to steal the words of a man whose lips we all watched carefully, we're all going to be in very deep doo-doo. So what I find frightening is the rapid rate of deterioration. It's the old story that the light at the end of the tunnel may be the oncoming train. And when we can go 200 years and create less than $500 billion in debt, and then in the next 16 years we go to $3 trillion in debt, we're really seeing things go bad fast. That's called the Figge Report. It's a 13-page booklet. It starts with bad and gets to worse, and then it goes to worser. And you're talking about retirement? This is back in the 80s. Now, notice the dates. They were expecting, based upon the numbers that they were crunching, that if we just keep on doing what we're doing, here's what's going to happen. Well, some changes were made. And just like Alan Greenspan, back in March of 2000, he made some changes. And we've been able to string this out for another 5 or 6 years. But boys and girls, the debt now is approaching $9 trillion. And the debt is worse. The dollar is declining. It's down around 80 basis points. Our debts are greater. The entire infrastructure is falling apart, as you saw with the bridge up in Minneapolis. That's just the tip of the iceberg. 25% of the bridges in the country are like that. We got $100 billion a year to spend on the war in Iraq, but we don't have $250 million to spend on a crummy bridge. That's not being done by accident. That's being done on purpose. President Reagan, when he was presented with the Grace Commission report, didn't want to hear it. That's exactly right. Reagan claimed that he was a conservative. Reagan wasn't a conservative. He was a New Deal Roosevelt Democrat liberal, pure and simple. And so is George Bush. And you know, Jesus made an observation one time. He said, you'll know them by their fruit. What do these people do? Now, back in the 1980s, the American economy was salvageable. Had they followed strict discipline and fiscal responsibility, we could have bailed the chestnuts out of the fire. It could have been done. But now we're in the year 2007. Kids, there's no way that you can bail these economic chestnuts out of the fire. So the $500 billion a year deficit is way beyond us. They tell us it's $250. They don't even add in Social Security and Medicare, which is upside down by $59 trillion already. Then you got to add another $17 trillion. They just added on. See, the president doesn't need taxes. They're just opening up the printing press. And that's what hyperinflation is all about. Now I'm going to give you your reminder here, and we'll come back and we'll introduce you to hyperinflation right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. So the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or this local radio station as much as they may want to. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now we've been discussing this thing of the baby boomers and their retirement program. The baby boomers are not going to retire. They may want to, and they may actually quit work, but it won't be very long until they are going to be overwhelmed by these problems of hyperinflation, the collapse of Social Security and Medicare, and the erasure, the failure of their savings program. Now, remember, you've only got three ways to finance your retirement. You've got a retirement program from your employer, you've got Social Security, and you've got your personal savings. You've got what it is that you created in your lifetime, maybe your home or your business or whatever. And all three of those props are being wiped away. That's why some years back I took a look at this and I said, well, let's see where I'm going. I'm not going to retire because I'm not going to have the wherewithal to finance it. Now, I pointed out early on that in the scripture, retirement is not an option. Retirement is not the purpose of life. Moses didn't retire. All of the prophets in the scripture, there's no retirement program. There's a tithing program. There's a taxing program. There's a monetary system. There's an economic system. But there's not retirement. And that's a new concept. The idea that we're going to work for 30 years for the military or 20 years and then we're going to retire with a military pension. I got a brother-in-law did that. He worked for the military for 20 years and retired. And then he worked for the post office and he retired. Now he's working for Walmart as a greeter and he's got these two retirement checks coming in, plus he's still working up at Walmart. Now, you can do that, you know, if you want to. And as long as the system works, and it has worked perfectly since 1933 when it was set up by President Roosevelt, it's worked perfectly up until now. And it's going to work for a little while longer, but there's an inevitable ultimate end to where all of this is leading. So I mentioned this before. Decisions that were made back in 1913 are coming to a head. Decisions made in 1933, 1971, those policy decisions are coming to a head. And they're going to have repercussions. And those repercussions are going to fall on all of us. And at some point in time, we're going to have to deal with them. So when I told you the story about Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, he's the president or the premier, prime minister, whatever you call it, he said, if we have any needs, any governmental needs, we will just print the money. Well, okay, now they've been doing that, and they've got a 3,000% inflation rate. They don't have gasoline, pork, beef, chicken, matches. There's a whole list of things, gasoline. They can't get. You don't have and you can't get and you can't buy because you don't have any money. And that's where the United States is heading, and that's where your retirement is heading. And it isn't that way because I say so. It's that way because that's what the numbers tell us and that's what history tells us. Now, it hasn't happened yet. Now, I thought it was coming in 79 and it didn't. Peter Grace thought it was coming in 95 and it didn't. We thought 2000 was it and it wasn't. It could well be that President Bush and Ben Bernanke and the gang can stretch it out for another 5 years. I don't know. God, I hope they do. You know, who's looking forward to the collapse of the economy, unemployment, and privation, and want? I'm not looking forward to that. I don't think any sensible, rational person would be. But nevertheless, that's what's coming. It's the same policy decision that was made on the bridge of the Titanic when somebody said, we're going to set a new transatlantic record, light up the last boiler, pour on the coal, pour on the steam, push her up to 23 knots, and we're steaming straight through 5,000 square miles of icebergs. And I watched the movie, The Titanic, and I read the book, and I thought about that policy decision. That was a very, very significant decision made by the captain and the owners of the White Star Line on behalf of the 2,200 passengers and crew that never had any input into that decision. And that's where we're at today. You see, the decisions made by Woodrow Wilson and the Congress of the United States establishing the Federal Reserve Bank back in 1913 had far-reaching ramifications to the baby boomers and you and I and everybody else today. We weren't privy to that. Nobody asked us to vote on whether or not we wanted a Federal Reserve System and a central bank. They made the decision for us, and it has long-range repercussions. And the same thing is true with President Roosevelt in 1933 with House Joint Resolution 192, abolishing gold, taking it out of circulation, going to a paper currency. And President Johnson in 1964 with the sandwich coins, and President Nixon with the termination of the gold window in 1971. You know, all of these historical events had long-term policy repercussions for the future. Now, we can see what happened to the Titanic, past tense. We cannot see what happened to the great ship America because it's still steaming at 23 knots, full speed ahead. We don't know. We don't know the date that it's going to hit the ice. We don't know which iceberg it's going to hit. We don't know the details of it. We just know that from past history, this is what's coming. So we see in Bible prophecy, in Deuteronomy chapter 28, God comes along and he says, hey, listen, kids, let me tell you. And you guys are giving me the finger, and I'm getting tired of it. So in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, they're called the penal clause chapters, penal clause. That's where you get paid back, that, you know, for the bad policy decisions that you made early on. He tells us a little story in here about famine. And I saw this, and I thought I'd pass it on to you because it's a shocker. When I talk about food shortages and famine here in the United States, you know, most people look at me and they say, well, you must be some kind of a lunatic fringe because there's never been any famine in America. Why we export food. I can remember as a child in California, the California Central Valley produced 57% of all the table vegetables that we ate in the United States of America. That's not true anymore. Now they come from China and Mexico. I can remember when America was the breadbasket of the world. That's not true. In 2008, America will become a net food importer. In 2007, we're not a net food importer. We're still exporting a little more than we import, but 50% of the food that you commonly get out of the supermarket. And boys and girls, you're not buying wheat, corn, and soybeans out of the supermarket. Those are the three major exports along with cotton. No, what you're buying in the supermarket are things like wheat thins, and then you're buying tacos, and then you're buying mayonnaise, and you're buying Brussels sprouts and fruits and vegetables and so on. And those fruits and vegetables, like those tomatoes that you're eating, like as not, came from Hermosillo, Mexico, not produced in the United States. That broccoli that you're eating, like as not, came from China. Now that is serious, god-awful serious. Scares the bejesus out of me, and I'll tell you why. In Deuteronomy 28, starting in verse 53, here's our Creator now. He says, now here's what I'm going to do to you. Here's the ultimate outcome of your usury, your interest, your unjust weights and balances, your Federal Reserve notes, your mortgages, and shopping for mortgages, and paying interest and usury, and collateralizing your notes, for giving me the finger. In short, here's the ultimate outcome. He says, and you shall eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and of your daughters, which the Eternal your God has given to you. And in the siege, and in the straitness wherewith your enemies shall distress thee. A siege is where you're surrounded and cut off from all of your supplies. It's where a foreign army comes around your city, shuts it off, and you can't get any supplies coming into the city. So you're left with what you've got. That's called a siege. Well, in modern times, let's take a look at our siege, because if our foodstuffs come from outside our borders, and if we belong to this one world order, this economic system, this world economic system, and we don't pay the Mexicans for their tomatoes, and we don't pay the Chinese for the broccoli and the garlic, do you suppose they might shut it off? And then you say, well, we've got atomic bombs. What the hell are you going to do? Go to Hermosillo and bomb Hermosillo, Mexico City, because they won't sell you tomatoes? Now he goes on to verse 54. He says, so that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother, and toward the wife of his bosom, and toward the remnant of his children which he shall leave, so that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children whom he shall eat, because he has nothing left him in the siege, and in the straitness wherewith your enemy shall distress you in all of your gates. The tender and delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, Britney Spears, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward the son, and toward her daughter, and toward her young one that comes out from between her feet, and toward her children, in which she shall bear, for she shall eat them for one of all things secretly in the siege and the straitness, wherewith your enemy shall distress you in your gates, if you will not observe to do all of the words of this law which are written in this book, that you may fear the glorious and fearful name of the Eternal your God. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't believe for a moment that the people of the United States of America are going to give up Christmas for the Feast of Tabernacles, or Easter for the Passover, or they're going to give up Sunday for the Sabbath. I don't believe it for a minute. Now, here's a guy that says that he's going to do something pretty wicked, awful, terrible, and evil to you. And furthermore, in chapter 7, same book, Deuteronomy, in verse 9, he says, "Know therefore that the Eternal, your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. You practice the Ten Commandments. You practice this law. You don't give him the finger." He says, "I'll be faithful. I'll perform on this. You want to retire? I'll give you retirement." But in verse 10, he says, "And repays them that hates him to their face to destroy them, and he will not be slack to him that hates him, and he will repay him to his face." Remember what I showed you a little earlier about this usury, about unjust weights and balances? Remember here he said, "You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meter, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, just ephod, a just hin shall you have. I'm the Eternal, your God. You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you." The implication here is, if you want to use mortgages, Federal Reserve notes, stocks and bonds, your days are not going to be lengthened in the land. "For all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God." Those people who are dealing in stocks and bonds, bank accounts, checking accounts, credit cards, Federal Reserve notes are an abomination. Verse 11 here, this is chapter 7, Deuteronomy 7:11. He says, "You shall therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them." Now, the preachers are the first in line to tell you, poppycock, don't listen to this God guy over here. You people go out and borrow money just like we have. We've got a church building fund, and we borrow money from the banks, and we pay interest and usury on it. Jesus nailed all that to the cross. Well, I checked that out, boys and girls. I went over here and asked Jesus, and he gives you the answer. It's in Matthew 5:17. He said, "Think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill." That prophecy I told you about, you're going to be reduced to eating your own children. He said, "Don't you think that I came to destroy that prophecy?" And in chapter 7, he said, "You keep my judgments and my commandments." And here's Jesus says, "Don't you think for a minute now that I came to destroy the law?" Now, I know what your preacher told you last Sunday. He told you that the law is nailed to the cross with Jesus and taken out of the way, and that you can do as you damn well please. But I wanted to point out to you that that's not what Jesus said. And I'll tuck it away in your heart. You know, I'm a reporter, not a preacher. I'm not here to tell you what you ought to do or what you need to do. I'm just here to point out that I think that preacher lied to you last week. I think your preacher may be a false prophet, a wolf in sheep's clothing. You might want to look at that guy a little closer. He went on to say in chapter 18, he says, "For truly I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled." I don't know that this law has been fulfilled yet. And heaven and earth hasn't passed away yet. Still here. "I think thou shalt not steal is still with us, and I think you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag is still with us, whether we like it or not. And if you want to continue using paper money, credit cards, that's fine. Shucks, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success." But the Grace Commission took a look at the ultimate end to it and said that ain't going to fly. Hell, even your president, for crying out loud, the guy that lies to you day and night when the truth would serve his purpose better, for crying out loud, has told you that it's unsustainable. Now, you know, you got to make some choices here in life, so you know, you need to get at it. Now, in verse 19, he says, "Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." Shucks, I've just seen be called great in the kingdom of heaven and tell you that I think it would be in everybody's best interest for us to sit down, shut up, fold our hands, and do what we're told for a change. I know it's a wild new concept, wild new idea, but the idea that we can use paper money, credit cards, interest and usury, go shopping for a mortgage, and then come out of all of this rich, fat, happy, and prosperous, I think it's a pipe dream. You think you're going to retire in your Winnebago tooling around America looking at the sights over here with these unjust weights and balances? There's never been a historical time when you could point that it's ever succeeded. Now, I told you my granny got away with it. I mean, you know, she paid in a little bit to Social Security. That's my granddad. Paid in a little to Social Security. She collected all of that probably 10 times over. So it worked well for her, the Ponzi scheme. But then, you know, I'm out of her loins, you know. I come out of her body. And I'm faced with the problem, the prospects over here, that this thing is going to collapse around my ears. And if it doesn't collapse around my ears, then it's going to collapse around my children's ears. So might as well be me rather than them. Now, this Grace Commission report, I don't know if it's still available. It's, you know, 20 years old. But just in case the Figgy Company is still in operation, let me give you their name and address. Now, I think that if you were to go to the Figgy people, it's Figgy International, 4420 Sherwin Road, Willoughby, Ohio. 4420 Sherwin, S-H-E-R-W-I-N Road, Willoughby, W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y, Ohio, the zip code 44094, called Figgy International. I'll bet you if you said, "Would you send me Tackle the Debt Before It's Too Late?" I bet they might have a copy of this report. Now, I saw this report back in the 1980s, scared the hell out of me, and I said, I'm gonna get onto this right away. I recommend to my students when we take this report, it's part of one of my classes, I photocopied it and put it in there. And I said, I think that you need a 4-year supply. When this thing turns turtle, you're going to have your own supply. If you're going to go through a hyperinflation in Zimbabwe, I think you need to have a 4-year supply of everything you're going to use, because this guy, Mugabe, is just going to print money for anything he wants, and it's going to produce famine, shortages. Zimbabwe in 2007 is going to need massive food imports for approximately 2/3 of their population. Hell, 20 years ago, they were exporting food. Now they're going to have famine rations sent to them because of these unjust weights and balances. That's what's happened historically in the past. It happened to us in 1783 here in America. It just happened in 2001 to the Argentines. The Russians just went through it in the late 1990s. I hear people every once in a while, yeah, but that'll never happen here in America. Hell, it's happened here in America before. What do you mean it won't happen here again? It's happened at least 20 times in history. Why won't it happen here? Don't you suppose that if we do what the Argentines did to bring upon hyperinflation in Argentina, that we'll get just about the same results that they got? Now, of course, the average guy don't think can grasp or comprehend the ramifications of hyperinflation. I'd rather go through the Great Depression than hyperinflation. But then that's just my druthers. If I had my druthers, I wouldn't wish hyperinflation or depression on anybody, but you know, that's where reality is. You go through the hyperinflation first, and that strips you of all of your wealth. Then you go through depression. That's where you can't get the necessities of life. That second. Well, the Germans went through it in the 1920s, and the Chinese and the Japanese have been through it, the Americans have been through it. The bright spot is that it only lasts, historically, about 12 to 18 months. And so it's going to be about 12 to 18 months of hell on earth. And that's about the bottom line. All right, next week we'll take on this hyperinflation with a vengeance, and I'll bring in some articles, and I'll show you what hyperinflation is, what it does to you, how it does it to you, and why it does it to you, and how you can avoid it. You want to avoid hyperinflation like AIDS, herpes, and VD if it's at all possible. That's my conclusion. So now I've got to give you a final reminder here. We're just about out of time, that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. So if you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School Director 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.